From the Schmoes No Network Studios in Los Angeles, California, it's time for Episode 5 of Jedi Alliance, celebrating the greatest saga ever told. Here are your hosts, Master Kenobi, Ken Napsok, and the young Padawan, Maud Garrett.
Hello! Hi, Schmoeville! How are you guys? Thank you so much for checking out this episode, episode 5. We are clocking them up. It is Labor Day. That's news to me. I don't know if I've celebrated
it. It is an American holiday that you're getting to experience the right way, working.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We have another action-packed show. No guests this time around because we are opening up the forum to you. Yes, we'll be opening up the phone line so we can talk to you guys, Schmoeville, about Star Wars and just have massive geekgasms and nerd outs, really.
And celebrate Star Wars with us. You know, this is kind of in celebration of us passing 1,000 likes on our Facebook page, which is it's something you can put on your resume for life.
I think so.
That we crossed that barrier, and it's actually up to 1,346 at the time of this recording, so we'll do a 2,000 celebration, I'm sure.
We need to stay on target.
Stay on target. I can't shake them. So we wanted to talk to the fans. Though we don't broadcast live at this time, we're still interactive. You can follow the action on the Jedi Alliance on the Schmoes No Network Facebook page and hashtag Jedi Alliance on Twitter when you follow us at Maud Garrett or at Ken Napsok. And so, you know, we don't need a guest. We have our fans today.
Everyone is the guest today. It's going to be pretty cool, though.
Yeah, and you've got some news coming up here, and you've got some personal stuff in the news, something you got to experience this week I'm excited to talk to you about.
Guys, I've never been so excited.
Yeah?
Yeah, there were tears. There were nerd tears for sure.
Love it.
So we get cracking into...
Let's do it. Let's dive right in into Renewed Hope, our look at this week in Star Wars news with Queen Amidala.
Thank you, Master Kenobi. Now, a man with far too much money has decided to build his very own Death Star home theater. He has become my best friend.
Honestly, this guy's awesome. Can we just take a look? This guy obviously is cashed up. And it's like, what do you do if you have all the money in the world? You build the Death Star in your living room.
Absolutely. Like, you recently had the chance to come to my place for a party. Mm-hmm. And you and guests got to see my room, which was nothing but Star Wars Legos and figures for a man approaching 40. It's a slippery slope.
When are you going to make that one? No! It stays in the box. It's okay.
It's in the box. But this guy's living my dream.
Absolutely. So the theater boasts all the kind of decor from within the Death Star. Yeah. A company kind of released all this information, Dylan Works, which is near Seattle. They said that this home theater has automatic doors that, yes, make the sound when they open. And there's twinkling star fields as well. Thanks. A big shout out to Roth Cornett from IGN. Obviously, she wrote this story out and I read it and I was like, this is the best. But who did this guy get to produce the concept art for the Death Star Theater? It was the same guy that created the Death Star in the first place, Doug Chang.
How does he do that? How do you just call up a guy?
This guy's got like one job. He makes the Death Star. He draws it. And now he's doing it, you know, in a personal sense.
I'm going to turn my garage into the Bespin Cloud City scene. Do you mind coming over and designing some stuff? Like, really?
Money talks, man. Are you kidding me?
Wow.
Everyone has a price.
How much scratch do you got to have for that?
So the layout of this particular Death Star inside his house has a lobby with a raised floor and a lowered ceiling to resemble the gangplanks of the Death Star. They applied mirrors to the floor and the ceiling, which reflect the walls so they appear to go on forever, you know, making space. Yeah. And then there's another feature that is the automatic pocket doors leading into the theater. Our client wanted the doors to operate quietly because doors that go psh, oh, that's actually from Star Trek, not Star Wars.
Yeah.
I thought that every door goes psh, unless you're that dude walking in, it goes donk.
As long as if he can yell, open the blast doors, close the blast doors. If that works, then I'm gonna move in with this guy.
Everything is good here. How are you?
And if he had that little mouse droid run around his house,
yeah.
That would be, wow, this guy's living a dream that I've been having since I was 5.
Call me, buddy. I want to go there. All right.
I want to go to there.
Sirio, who was Arya's dance teacher in Game of Thrones, has scored a role on Episode 7.
If you don't want any Episode 7 news, spoiler, I don't know if I've said too much, but apparently it's not the biggest spoiler out there. We don't know who he's going to play. Mm-hmm. We don't know what he's going to do. But according to an article posted on the BBC, this guy, his name is Miltos Yerolmo, I think.
The first sword of Braavos.
There you go. Yes, he was the dance teacher. He was the sword.
The dancing master.
Yeah, huh?
I love this.
Yeah.
Even though I'm pretty sure it's going to be something tiny.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a big part. But that guy won my heart in that first season of Game of Thrones.
He was so great.
And it's a different show, but I don't think he's dead in that show anyway. So
you never saw him die.
Mm-hmm. So, but he was so key to that, to Arya's upbringing. Yes. And he did such a good job with what little he had. That's why, even if he's just some dude with a lightsaber, and I'm sure he's got a lot of experience with swords, right?
Yeah, yeah. What do we say to death?
What do we say to death? Not today.
Oh, it's going to be great. So, yeah, it's not going to be a major character. Great. There is speculation that his extensive experience will lead to holding a lightsaber. Mm-hmm. If anyone's earned it in the world, it is this man. Moving on.
There is a Star Wars Advent calendar. It's available right now to order from Toys R Us.
Oh! Every week I kind of want to talk about a collectible that someone can have or buy, right, whether it's a new lightsaber, whether it's new memorabilia, whatever it is. This particular time, there is a Lego Star Wars 2014 Advent calendar. You can order it on the Toys R Us website for $39.99, and there is a ship-to-home option at the moment.
I brought my laptop today. I'm going to order it right now, I think.
This time it's $10 cheaper than the last one, too.
That's great. Hmm. You know I love Legos. You know my obsession with them.
Yes.
I bought that Imperial Walker AT-AT AT-AT thingy this past week.
Spits and swallows.
Yeah, the debate still goes. But I might have to do that this year. Maybe we'll have to do that and celebrate Christmas, count down the days with the Lego Star Wars Advent calendar.
Only if the noise is like... when you open it, I'll let that one go. And finally, over the weekend, John Williams and his symphony performed at the Hollywood Bowl.
This is what I wanted to talk to you about.
I was there.
Yeah, you got to experience it.
I'm not going to lie, I was 20 minutes late, missed Jurassic Park.
That's okay.
Which I was really upset about. Like, I did a bit of a sulk. I was like, man, because I watched Jurassic Park not long ago, and that music is just so
great. Williams is great, but are there any Jedis in that movie? No.
No, there's
so you didn't miss the important stuff.
Okay, I'll never do that again. Look, he played only 3 songs from Star Wars, and he kicked it off with the main theme. And I recorded some for you to see.
Everyone's got lightsabers,
Yep. So you could buy little dodgy $10 lightsabers there, which were actually just rave sticks, but whatever. But the fact that when, you know, that happened, I was just, it, like, someone punched me in the throat.
Yeah.
Alicia said that I was middle of the conversation. I was like, so anyway, and then cried.
I got the video from you via text, and I couldn't have been more proud of you as my Jedi Alliance co-pilot of the tears coming out of your face.
I couldn't help it.
Yeah.
And he was so great, and you know, the whole orchestra was just beautiful, and then they played the Imperial March, and I've got a video of that too. Oh, how great is that?
That is awe-inspiring.
I have a bad habit as well of conducting every time I hear any Star Wars music. I immediately conduct.
I noticed when you posted that video today of you getting ready for the show, listening to Duel of Fates as you're putting your makeup on. It looked like you were having some kind of seizure, but I think you're directing the music in your head.
Yes. I was trying to put mascara on as well. It was just kind of in the way of me getting through it.
That's awesome.
But yeah, the photos of that one are up. I think I put the videos up as well on the Facebook page if you like that one. My favorite part about posting the Imperial March video was when I said, this is the Imperial March, otherwise known as my mum's ringtone when she calls me. And pretty much every person that commented said, same.
Say, what's that saying for mothers?
Right?
We got what?
And just to close things down, we are having a bit of a fangasm right now, so I thought it's only fitting that we just get a little bit of a look at our t-shirts for the day So you've got the Hoth t-shirt.
This is a Ripped Apparel shirt, and I got that 3-pack. They have the Tatooine, the Biker Scout shirt, and this one. I put it up on the Facebook page, and the fans voted that I was to wear this one today. So it's Hoth.
Yeah.
It's a little Tauntaun on there. Kind of a take on the old Icy logo.
Yep. He's drinking a Slurpee.
He is drinking a Slurpee.
And I have...
You have the Millennium Falcon.
fastest hunk of junk in the galaxy.
Yeah.
And the way that it looks on my shirt, it's obviously about to do the Kessel Run. What?
Hey, all right.
It only happens in less than 12 parsecs, no, I'm sorry. So there you go. We love our t-shirts and we'll
date some scoundrels. It's great. And we got, yeah, we love
Stop us! All right, okay. So here's the catch about today.
This is a Labor Day thing, huh?
Yes.
We're gonna, even on Labor Day, I don't get to rest from trivia?
No.
Okay.
And the thing about today is that I was supposed to bring in the cards and I didn't. So we are finding these questions online. If you would like to randomly select one of a trivia already set up in there.
Are you giving me the answers?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. I didn't look. Swear on my life. We're doing this on your iPad today. Okay.
Okay.
I get the normal six?
Yeah.
And what's the score? We're at 2018 right now, right?
Yes.
I had a little poor performance last week. You really pulled up with Jovenshire's help.
I did. Yes.
But you guys were great. So, all right. I'm ready.
All righty. So, these are a little bit trickier, I believe. But how many monetary units did Ben Kenobi propose to pay Han for the trip to Alderaan?
17,000 Republic or Imperial credit.
Two in advance and 15 when they reach Alderaan.
Okay.
That's correct.
Okay.
What did the Empire find on Dantooine?
The remains of what appeared to be a former rebel base.
I swear you're actually answering these almost word for word. It's scary.
Mm.
What was the number of Leia's cell on the Death Star?
Oh, detention block AA-43?
2187.
Okay, I didn't get that. Not even close.
That's so hard.
Not even close.
What weapons did the rebel fighters use to penetrate the Death Star's defense?
Proton torpedoes.
Oh my God, how do you do this? Where did Luke and Han first meet?
Luke and Han first met, well, in the Mos Eisley Cantina.
You betcha. And the last question is, there's an asterisk next to this one, so I'll change it.
Okay.
What happened to Luke's landspeeder right after he parked it in front of the cantina?
Some Jawas came up to it and kind of rubbed it down a little bit there.
Yeah, a Jawa scurried up and began fondling it.
Yeah.
That is,
wow.
What, 6 for 6?
Okay.
Oh, good Lord.
5 for 6, right?
Oh, 5.
5 for 6.
Oh, that's right. Layers.
5 for 6.
All right. Cell, which I would never
Those
have
questions are...
They, you...
Okay, I like that. I'm sweating.
Yeah, it's forming on your brow right now. Yes. Mm. Good Lord. Please be easy
sweating
on me.
Sweating like an Ugnaught working hard on droids.
Nice.
Ha ha. Ooh, that's a good reference there, huh, for myself. All right. That's good. I got to get myself a little more concentrated in here. I was a little nervous there. You actually officially caught me off guard with that star pause.
Oh, yeah.
I hadn't. That one, as designed, completely caught me off guard. I was still reveling in you getting to experience John Williams live.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know.
That was beautiful. Ooh. I'm sorry that you couldn't be there.
Hey, so since we don't have a guest this week, my young Padawan, I figured you and I would maybe discuss some of our favorite Star Wars moments.
Yeah, there's so many of them. And we kind of suggested that we would select three each. And talk through these and just not only what the scene was, but why it impacted us in such a way. So
yeah, these are little tiny moments too. There's some bigger things we can choose or bigger themes, but these are three things that kind of grabbed us for whatever reason and kind of moved us and attracted us to the franchise and the property. So go ahead and give us a go here, young Padawan.
All right, let's do one for one.
Yeah.
So my first one is the Moon of Endor, when we first saw it. Everything down from like the design of the helmets that they had, where you finally saw the stormtroopers on the speeder bikes there, like all of that kind of stuff. But it was funny, this is the first time we've seen the ice planet and the desert, and now we had the forest,
right?
You know, and for me, just seeing all the vast trees there, and apparently they filmed that in California.
Yeah, Redwood, Crescent City Redwoods up there outside Frisco and everything. You know, Lucas loves NoCal. Yeah,
I didn't know that.
We could take a field trip, Jedi Alliance field trip. We could go up there and walk around, maybe find some leftover Ewok props or something.
Oh, my goodness. Because something that stood out for me then, I think it was when I saw it in the cinemas when it was digitally remastered when I was 11, was the background whistling in it. And it goes... like that, and I would get that over and over in my head, and I have for the last sort of 16 years of my life.
I love those little moments. That's a perfect example. So something just grabs you. I know what you're talking about too. It's that shot and those little could be Ewoks whistling while they work. It could be some kind of weird forest creature. I totally know what you mean. That grabs you in. And I love Endor. It's next to Hoth. It's my favorite planet in the Hoth.
Give me tropical over ice and snow any day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. What's one for you?
Well, for me, I'm going to start the fight in the Dune Sea over the Sarlacc pit.
Oh, yeah.
As I've talked about, my first actual viewing of any Star Wars movie was Return of the Jedi. Mm-hmm. I saw that first as a young 7-year-old. And so that was the first Star Wars battle I got to see.
Yeah.
So all this stuff had been introduced to me, you know, this Jabba, this vile gangster, this Han Solo guy. And then they're going to be thrown into this big creature with tentacles coming out, which at the time didn't have that little Shop of Horrors thing coming out.
It was just this
weirdly looking toothed hole in the ground. So as a kid, the nervous excitement I had for what was about to happen, I had no idea. At 7, you don't really grasp, but, well, that's a main character. He's probably not going to die.
Yeah.
I'm thinking this poor Luke guy I just met is going to go in that hole.
Yeah, but when you think about it, it's a pit that goes, you know, it's got to...
Right.
If you slip in, there's no way out.
And
there's
also,
only one way to
it's
go.
It's terrifying. And actually, maybe talk about this more in Duel of Fates, but it's terrifying. I grew up in Pismo Beach, California, a mile from the beach, which is nothing but sand dunes that I used to go play in. My fear is I'm going to crest over a dune and I'm going to see this in real life. Like, is this a thing? Is this a real possibility? So I was so terrified. And that moment that Luke gives a little salute to R2 and the lightsaber opens, comes out and shoots... And it engages and ignites.
And you realize they had a plan.
I was hooked as a kid. I was already like, where? What is this world I'm watching? That moment, lightsaber comes on, battle's on.
Boing.
I'd love that. Every time I see it, I kind of relive that as a 7-year-old in the back of my head.
I want to know, though, when it wasn't digitally altered with that pod, like the like Jate was saying, the little shop of horrors. Kind of,
feed me, Seymour.
What sounds did it make? Was it still like a screech?
Yeah, it still had the same screech.
Okay.
Yeah, which is why one of those weird choices that Lucas sometimes makes when he redoes these movies is like, I don't know why we needed, there was more, it's that Hitchcockian thing of I'd rather, you know, be terrified by my fears versus what I'm actually seeing.
Exactly.
I didn't need to see this monster come out and grab them.
I think the Dewback, you know, rearing up in front of them was Isley Cantina was a little bit redundant as well. I know they're trying to paint the picture a little bit better.
I got it. Yeah, I agree with you. But yeah, but for me, that fight over in the Dune Sea.
It's funny that you mentioned that one as well. And my second favorite moment, also from Return of the Jedi, which is probably why it's my favorite movie, was Jabba's Palace. You know, we've seen Tatooine for the first time where it was the stretch of land. It was a Mos Eisley Cantina. But now we see Jabba's Palace on the same planet, and it doesn't even feel like the same place.
Yeah.
But for me, it was knowing that, looking at Luke going, you've changed. Right. You're so serene. You are calm. You're walking into certain death.
He's and I was a like, Jedi Knight in front of Captain Solo.
Something is up. And he's obviously, he went through had that car accident, so his face was physically different as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, which worked.
Oh, yeah. The Wampa scene took care of that. I mean, they beautifully worked it in. You didn't even notice that as a kid.
But for me, you know, you see Leia different. You're like, wow, she's always been so covered. And now we see her body.
Now, as she said, Boba Fett could see all the way to Miami.
Oh, is that what they call it these days? But for me, it was like when the Rancor pit opened, Luke falls in and this giant monster is there.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, right. Now, I know what you mean because it's like, again, so that was my first experience. And as a kid, you're listening to these two droids say, oh, poor, you know, Lando and Chewbacca never returned from this place. And so when he knocks on that door and that little creature comes, and then even the door opens and that little spider droid comes up behind him. As a kid, I was like, don't turn around. No, I don't want to watch this. What is this? And then you turn that corner and it's a world. It's a giant world.
Love
that. Totally get it.
Yep. What about you? Next one.
Another one for me is when Lando Calrissian shows his true colors to save Han. We got to save Han. Lando Calrissian to me is one of the best new characters introduced in the second part of any franchise ever.
I didn't know this until I saw your notes, and I read it, and I was like, so true.
He is beloved, but he's still overlooked in the pantheon of Star Wars characters in my mind. Mm-hmm. Lando Calrissian brought a tonal shift change to Star Wars from Star Wars to Empire. He shows up. He's Billy Dee Williams. He's classy.
You
he's
love
silky.
Him.
He's cool.
And then you hate him.
And you don't trust him.
And then you love him.
But then he's charming the socks off Leia a little bit, you know, and it just really expanded the franchise in my mind. Star Wars, though Lucas had the whole, you know, well, he said 9 stories prepared, Star Wars could have been very self-contained by just the nature of what they didn't know if they were going to get a second shot. Mm-hmm. So you need to introduce these new characters to keep this whole franchise and this whole saga going. And Lando, to me, is one of the key characters that expanded this universe.
I felt sorry for him when he was in the Millennium Falcon with Nien Numb.
Nien Numb.
Nien Numb.
Yeah, dígate.
He's my most loathed character. Which is I can't even say it. I'm so angry.
That figure hangs on my wall. he's from the moons of Sullust. How dare you? When I watched Empire, I was heartbroken as a young boy when Lando...
Betrays
yeah. and turns. And I didn't understand back then, hey, I just had to do what I got to do to help my people. All those little Ugnaughts and Bespin yeah. guards running around and that dude with the big vacuum cleaner as he's leaving. So I was heartbroken when it was like, hey, I'm sorry, man. But then you're like, this deal's getting worse all the time. I'm like, no, as a kid, I'm like, there's something good about this guy. Mm. And then when Chewie starts choking him and he reveals, I've got to save Han, I literally like leapt up and was like, I knew it.
His heart's in the right place.
He's a good dude. And that is one of my favorite moments. Lando turning good.
Yeah. Okay. I'll have that one. And number three for me is when we first meet Han Solo. So walking into Mos Eisley Cantina, just the feel of the place, you know, where it's the scum and villainy of, everywhere. That's like the one place to go. And then having the, my friend doesn't like you. Well, I'm sorry. I don't like you either. All that kind of stuff I thought was incredible.
Yeah.
And then just seeing Han, one leg up, just playing with the back of the wall as if he's not got a care in the world in the most dangerous place on Tatooine,
right.
apart from Jabba's Palace.
Right.
That for me
was a great moment, mm-hmm. too. And know it sealed it for me? I wonder if it for you when he flips the coin. Sorry for the mess.
Yeah. Boing.
Like, what a cool dude.
But even like getting in there, you saw Obi-Wan use his Jedi mind. Powers for the first time. So the whole, you don't need to see our identification.
Yeah.
We don't need to see it. I was like, what is he doing? That is greatness right there.
These so yeah, the that scene for me,
yeah. minus the Dewback roaring up, you know.
In the prequels or the re-release. Yeah, mm-hmm. okay. Wrapping up for me, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to throw a little curveball here, Marty. I'm going to go with a little prequel love. A little prequel love. I know I'll probably get, this will probably, controversy will probably erupt in the comment section.
What is thy bidding, my master?
What is thy bidding? I'm going to say one of my favorite moments in all of the Star Wars franchise is when Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru, young Uncle Owen and young Aunt Beru, before the sun weathered them rather quickly.
Ouch! Too soon?
They stand, it's the last minute of Revenge of the Sith. Obi-Wan shows up on his little creature and he gives baby Luke to them. And you know what? I buy into that moment every time. And no matter what you think about the prequels, and they had their frustrations, they had it all. That scene, that last minute, contains a callback to the Luke's theme. It contains a callback to the iconic twin sons of Tatooine. Mm-hmm. It is the last moment we see Obi-Wan before he goes into hiding. And when he hands over the baby and there's a moment he looks at him and he kind of nods almost to himself and he disappears into the Junlin Waste, basically, where we're not going to see him, where he's going to age rather quickly, too. and that last shot, as overprocessed as some of the prequel shots and films and the colors, and it looks so smooth, the whole prequels. But I'll take that last shot where Joel Edgerton and Bonnie P.S., I believe is her name, are looking off into the twin sons. Every time I see that, I want to immediately turn on New Hope.
Oh, that's cool.
And that's exactly what it's supposed to do.
Is
what I needed to do.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So there we go. Little prequel love.
I wish I had some blue milk to cheers you after that trip down nostalgia lane.
We should. You want to take a couple calls then go into our next segment? What
I
do you want to do?
Let's
do
it. So.
We got some calls up.
This is the show where we are putting the lines open to you guys. We did put our number up on the Facebook page and gave you a time frame to call in, which you have done. So let's get our very first caller before we head over to Duel of the Fates. Who have we got, Jate?
Hey, it's George, guys.
George McCann.
It's George McCann.
Hey,
Georgie,
George.
One of Schmoville's
best residents.
Also one of the admin of the Schmoville fan page on Facebook. Go ahead and find it there. Georgie, welcome to the Jedi Alliance, celebrating the greatest saga ever told. What you got, man?
I got a question. If you could hang out for a day on any planet or any place in the Star Wars universe, where would it be?
That's pretty cool. That's a great question, George.
And Maud, by the way, the Han with his leg up, awesome. Totally on point. That's one of my favorite scenes in all of Star Wars. So, yeah, that's my question, and keep doing your thing. I love it.
Thanks, George. Thanks, George. And of course, you're going to get to hear the show, all of our answers. We're not recording live, so all of these answers will come out on iTunes and YouTube later. So you want to go first? Where you want to go?
I think Cloud City was beautiful. I think when we first saw
interesting choice
Cloud City, before it became, you know, under turmoil, I can just picture what Landro would be like as the mayor there, what the whole place would be like.
Right.
It kind of seemed like it was a lot more futuristic. It was clean. You know, it wasn't dirty. It wasn't, you know, where the scum and villainy all were. I think that would be a really, really lovely place.
And I'm glad you bring that up, because one of the things I do like about the re-releases in the what you saw first in the mid-90s, we can malign a lot of the changes Lucas made, but I loved what he did with Cloud City.
I do too. I thought it was stunning.
It opened it up. It looked more just like it was supposed to be, a city in the clouds.
Yeah.
And I give him a lot of credit for that. I really, really enjoyed that. So you'd hang out in Bespin, Cloud City, huh?
I think I would. I'd like to be kind of, obviously, you'd never want to be a peasant anywhere, or, you know, a beggar or anything like that. But if I was to kind of be one of the elite,
you'd just be like, maybe, I don't know.
I think it would just be beautiful.
Maybe you could date a nice Ugnaught. Maybe you could, come on, you figure it out. For me, I would like to be in the cafeteria of the second Death Star.
So you're going to need a tray.
No, you know what? For me, I love Endor. And there is not a lot.
Yep.
In the there's not a lot to places a good humanoid like me would probably comfortably live, unless you count some of the stuff unless you count Wilford Brimley's cabin from the Battle of Endor TV movies. But I love forest environments.
Yeah.
I love, like I said, that tropical environment. I love a nice parka.
I do too. But you know what I love more?
Yeah.
A toilet. A working
I do
toilet.
Too. That's why I'm not at Burning Man this week. I would find some way to make Endor habitable for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they do have those random bases throughout there. So that's
I mean,
fine.
I could be happy in an Ewok village.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could.
Only if you weren't, you know, staked up. Over an open fire. Hey, George, are you still there?
No, I think George is gone. But we got a new caller on the Jedi Alliance. So welcome to the Jedi Alliance. Who do we got?
We got Max from Quebec.
Hey, Max, how you doing? What you got?
Good.
Really quickly, we want to ask you a question about Star Wars as well before you jump into this. Who is your favorite character?
That would be Darth Vader.
Nice. And which is the more intimidating foe? We're going to get to it, but we're going to start it with you. The Sarlacc or the Rancor?
I'm sorry?
The more intimidating foe. Is it the Sarlacc in the Dune Sea, or is it the Rancor in Jabba's palace?
Oh,
to say one,
a tough one.
Or you can choose to sit on the fence.
The Sarlacc.
You are going to go with Sarlacc. You'd rather not die in the Sarlacc. That's
and be
fair.
Digested over 10,000 years. All right. What's
Max,
your question,
Max? What do you got for us?
I just wanted to know, if you guys haven't answered that question, what is your all-time favorite Star Wars movie out of all of the movies?
Sure, absolutely. For me, you know, as a kid growing up, Return of the Jedi was the one I gravitated to the most. But you hit a certain age, and especially a film student like I was, heading that direction towards screenwriting and everything, you turn your sights to Empire. And for me, I can never overlook the fact that Empire changed how we view sequels and how we view franchises. It forever changed it. And that brave, dark ending, Irvin Kershner's directing, I just love what he did with, he didn't have the big end battle other than the lightsaber battle, but he had an emotional ending, and that to me, still perfect filmmaking.
Or you're like me and you hold on to the best movie and you don't grow up and mature and see the, you know, the emotional impact that Emperor, the Strikes Back has. Empire, sorry. Yeah. It's Return of the Jedi for me.
Yeah.
I love the closure for it. I thought it was the best movie of all of them. I felt so happy when it ended.
For you, Max?
Max is gone. Do we have another caller? We do.
Who's
next?
Hello.
Welcome to Jedi Alliance.
Hey, guys.
Who have you? What's your name?
My name is Greg.
Greg, where are you calling from, Greg?
Orlando.
Orlando, cool. Florida. I like it. George McCann's still on my mind.
He's all Greg.
Greg, let me ask you this question. If you were to fly, what would you rather fly, an X-Wing or a TIE Fighter?
Oh, an X-Wing.
X-Wing.
By far.
just for sleekness, or you don't like to fight for the empire?
Or just so you can rub it in.
Well, I mean, now that you ask it, there's a couple, I mean, obviously big reasons there. One, I do side with the rebellion. I think I am a rebel at heart.
Mm. So good work, Greg. And, the force is strong with you.
To tie into the question I was going to ask is, I've actually been rereading a lot of the Expanded Universe, and mm-hmm. I recently went through the X-Wing series.
Hey.
All about Rogue Squadron and Rey Squadron, so that's definitely feeding into my love of the X-Wing right now.
Red Leader standing by.
That's good. You got any other specific questions for us, Greg? What do you want to talk about?
We're all sharing here.
I guess the question I had was I know you're somewhat familiar with the X-Wing universe, but mm-hmm. how familiar are you guys with like the X-Wing series or some of the other books like that?
I am a movie elitist Star Wars fan, so my dabbling into the EU has been very slim. I've only ever played video games in the Expanded Universe. Some of it falls into canon, some of it doesn't. So I've played The Force Unleashed, The Force Unleashed 2, Knights of the Old Republic, Knights of the Old Republic 2. I didn't go anywhere near Old Republic, the MMO, mm-hmm. Because frankly, MMOs stole my soul once and I will refuse to give it back to them. But yeah, I'm more of a gamer than comics or the books, but you know, I love fantasy if I'm gonna read a book.
Yeah.
But I'm dabbling now, Greg. I'm getting in there.
We're working. And for me, Greg, you know, I haven't read them. I'm very familiar with some of the titles and some of the stuff they covered in them. But if I was to say what how I'm more familiar with Rogue Squadron and all that stuff, it's actually through the X-Wing and TIE Fighter video games from my old Commodore 64.
Played them too.
And not Commodore 64. That was a little young. PC.
Yeah,
in the mid-90s.
When Windows first started?
Yeah. By Windows 95 era. That TIE Fighter series, and so Rogue Squadron, that's the first time I really kind of heard it as a Star Wars fan. You had heard the term Rogue, and Rogue, send Rogues 10 and 11 from Empire and everything, but then it was like, oh, it's like a squadron, it's like a thing. And so it's something I definitely would still want to get into. Does Wedge factor into those stories, or are they later on?
Yeah, so the X-Wing series primarily will always follow Wedge, but he goes between Rogue Squadron, and then halfway through the series, it switches authors, and then they make Wedge kind of start a new squadron called Wraith Squadron. So then the rest of the characters are different, but Wedge is throughout all the books, and so he's kind of the central.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just perspective a lot, but he's the one that's consistent throughout all the books.
Well, Wedge is Obi-Wan's cousin? Or nephew?
The actor.
Yeah, in real life. Yeah, Dennis Lawson. And
get
and
out.
Ewan McDonald, as they say on Red Letter Media.
that's a fun fact that I know about that.
Yeah.
And that's all I got.
She wouldn't. That was a trivia question. Greg, thanks for your call. We're going to take another call here, Jet Alliance, and we're going to go into Duel of Fates, and then we're going to come back to your calls here in a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So,
who have we got on the line right now for Jedi Alliance? Hello?
Hi.
Hello.
What's your name?
Pablo from Mexico.
Get out! Hello, Pablo from Mexico. How are you?
Great, thanks.
So glad for the international flair. Pablo, when was the first time you saw Star Wars?
Well, actually, I first saw The Phantom Menace.
That shows your age. 96. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I'm 18.
You're 18, so that you know what? I actually, Pablo, I want to hear your perspective on that. Then, if that's the first time you've been exposed to this, that's different than most of us. So, what did you think when you saw Phantom Menace?
Well, like 7, 8, more or less. I was like, "Oh, Darth Maul shot." Then we grew up, and I watched it again. I was like, "Oh no!" My dad actually introduced me to the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, this is actually Star Wars. I'm sorry, but I don't dig the prequels at all.
Isn't that funny? So he watched the prequels first and then caught the actual OT and then was like, oh, I feel cheated. It's a CGI.
That's an interesting perspective. So, Pablo, what do you got for us? What do you want to talk about today on Jedi Lands?
Well, I actually saw your latest Duel of the Fates.
Yes.
Yeah.
The one that we posted up today.
I'm really into this. Yeah, sorry.
The one we posted up, the more intimidating foe, the Sarlacc or the Rancor?
The Sarlacc, definitely. I don't know if you guys have played The Force Unleashed.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, the Sarlacc that appears there, oh my God, that just gives me the chills.
Dude, the Rancor in Knights of the Old Republic, where I tried to beat him over and over again and didn't know that you had to set the trap.
Yeah, but the star like that, it's, I don't remember the name of the planet, but it's with, I don't know, your star killer and your, I think it's,
was it on Tatooine?
I don't remember the name of the planet at all.
Yeah.
Tatooine?
I think it's Felicia or something.
Okay.
No, I don't remember, but it's massive. I played that game a long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah, they have a lot of Sarlacc stuff in The Force Unleashed where the Empire's trapped the arms down and everything, and you kind of almost feel sorry for this creature, and then you end up inside one.
Yeah.
And you have to fight your way
and
out.
And you have a long time to think about what's happening.
And Pablo, of course, you remember that breath, that every time that big breath the Sarlacc would take, you had to like hide and grab on something. That's great. Well, thank you for sharing.
Thanks. Thank you so much, guys.
Hey, keep listening. Pablo from Mexico, thank you.
Say we get into Duel of the Fates.
Let's
get
into Duel of Fates. But first, I'd like to star pause you.
Oh, okay. All right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I will hand you over the random list that we just go scroll up or down, preferably up because it gets harder than.
Okay. All right. We'll go. It's 25-18 at the time.
Yes.
All right. Oh, is it? Okay. So let me ask you this question.
Six questions.
Who gave Luke his lightsaber?
Obi-Wan.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you that one. That's correct.
Thank you.
He got it from Luke's father, but you're correct.
He gave it to him.
Okay.
Yes.
What was Vader's plan for the captured blockade runner?
The captured blockade runner?
Mm-hmm.
Vader's plan?
The Tantive IV, beginning of New Hope.
The captured blockade runner was Leia, wasn't it?
For the captured, not the captain, the captured blockade runner. What did he want to do with that ship?
Oh, the actual ship?
Yeah.
Oh, he wanted to not pick it apart for scrap. Was there a memory chip in there that he was trying to get access to? Was there codes? Was it stealth?
Are you asking me for the answer?
Yes.
He wanted to destroy it.
Don't salvage, rape and pillage, Darth Vader.
Okay. That was the question you had for me. I got to go scroll down here a little bit there. Or scroll up, as you want me to do.
Thank you.
Okay. Who referred to Ben Kenobi as a wizard?
Was it Han? Oh, dear. Don't look at me like that. I feel like I'm disappointing you as a human. young Padawan here. Wizard. Who called Ben Kenobi?
That man's just an old wizard.
Uncle Owen.
That's right. That's right. Two of three.
Just,
all right.
Just. That was a shove in the right direction.
Who did 3PO give thanks to when he was about to take his oil bath?
Luke?
Run it through your head.
Yeah, it's Tatooine. Yeah. Luke's there trying to get rid of the lock on R2. He's flicking out all the dirt, which I thought was really cool for some reason. I was like, what is that? And he was sinking in, wasn't he? This is a direct quote from a movie. I have bought the box set again. I'm about to do anyway. Thank the.
In a five and a four.
Thank the. Three. Can I call a friend? We're getting people calling in. No, he was not going to thank the Jawas. Oh, thank the.
The Maker.
Oh, okay.
Which, as we learned, the Maker technically was Anakin Skywalker from The Phantom Menace.
Oh.
I mean, if you want to be stupid.
Well, if you want to be a gamer, the Maker is the gods from Dragon Age.
Two of four. All right. What did Darth Vader do to Ben's cloak after he struck him down?
Oh, he grabbed it.
That.
Didn't he? He picked it up. And he was like, Burr. He got angry and he said something important. Burr.
Really?
Yeah. Didn't he?
Are you thinking of like E.T.?
No, they dueled. He was like, strike me down. And then he did. And then he went, phew.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then
Darth Vader.
This is like that those videos where it's like the 6-year-old who's never seen Star Wars before tries to relay it back. Oh, I'm very
Mod
aware
reacts
of this.
To AOL. Yeah.
And it was like, oh, wow, that's pretty impressive. And Darth was like, ugh. What did he do with the cloak?
Give me that answer. No? He tapped it with his foot.
Oh, okay.
All right, 2 of 5. We're struggling today. It's 25-20. We got the final question.
I'm on holidays.
Final question.
Yes.
Where did Luke Skywalker tell his uncle he was going to go to pick up some power converters?
The Tashi Station.
You got that one. You're back on the board. 3 of 6, 50%. 25, some 21.
I've got. Some things are a little bit... Hey. He kicked the cloak. He kicked the cloak. Hey. What did you do with it? No, he framed it and put it up in, you know, his quarters.
Good stuff. All right, let's get to Duel of the Fates. Today, we've already mentioned it. Who is the more intimidating foe, the Rancor monster or the Sarlacc pit? Basically, choose how you want to die.
No, it's not how you'd want to die at all. But I think it's like what monster has more of a reputation?
Gotcha.
What would you lose your bowels over more? I'm going to put you in a Rancor pit, or yeah. I'm going to threaten and hover you and push you into a Sarlacc pit.
And this is not. It's tough to fact. You can't factor in some of the knowledge we have as fans. That's we know true. How some of these people got out of it.
Yes.
Pablo mentioned the Force Unleashed. I was going to cite that. As one of the reasons we know we can survive the Sarlacc.
Yes.
But really, if you're in this universe, you wouldn't know that.
No. So, all that you know is that you digest slowly and painfully over 10,000 years, wasn't it?
Yeah. Hmm. So do you want me to go first?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to take the Sarlacc.
Okay.
Because of the unknown.
Yeah.
In my life, I struggle with giving up control.
Right.
At least a Rancor, I know what I got.
Okay.
I can run under it. I can do something. It's slow moving. I could probably I'd be frozen with fear, much like Snort, the Gamorrean guard we paid tribute to last week.
Yeah.
but the Sarlacc, it is just, and we're going with classic Sarlacc with no Little Shop of Horrors mouth. We don't know what's beyond that. And if I'm standing over there and one of those leather-faced guys are poking me to jump off, I
They are both forms of punishment,
yeah.
I feel. As a threat, like if you saw a Rancor, you'd be like, I have to get out of here now. If you saw a Sarlacc pit, you would walk around it, which is why I feel the Rancor is the more intimidating foe, because it is an actual humanoid monster with yeah. claws and hands and moving legs that yep. he can chase you, you know? And when you are in a small pit like that, the fact that he, you know, mm-hmm. a skull saved him because he had great aim. I don't have great aim. I would be dead, you know? And I, when playing the games as well, when I walked into this room for Knights of the Old Republic and there is yeah. a Rancor there and it's not facing you.
You're scared.
I'm so scared.
I agree.
I take three steps. I try and lay some mines down and then it turns around and you are so screwed.
Terrified.
Yeah. And I, when watching the monsters for the first time in Return of the Jedi, I saw the Rancor. I was like, I am so scared. The teeth, it was like wet around its mouth. And then I saw the Sarlacc pit and I was like, well, that.
Okay. Yeah.
Rancor scared me more. I find it to be the more intimidating foe.
I agree with that. And Force Unleashed, I had that problem too. When you run into the Rancors, you're like, oh, there's so many of them. I don't know. But yeah, for me, that's sort of like once you get down there, then to find through Force Unleashed, whether that's canon or not, I accept that as the truth. And see what Boba Fett had to do down there to crawl out eventually.
Yeah.
Not canon at this point. We'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. But yeah, ooh. It's tough, but we'll put it to you guys on the Facebook page. It's up now. We've got some great comments coming in because we put it up ahead of time this time. Eric Olson talks about how the pit is more intimidating. You can avoid the Sarlacc with no problem. It's just stay out of reach of his tentacles. You can mm-hmm. hopefully outrun a Rancor.
Mark Riley, who is a part of the Shmoes family, said the Rancor, he's a Taurus, so we're kin.
Perfect.
I love that one.
Perfect. So you have to just find us on Facebook, the Jedi Alliance, on the Shmoes Know Network. Go there, like it if you haven't already, and get involved in these debates. We'll post the results this week. Last week, of course, we had the what is the cooler ship, the Millennium Falcon versus Slave One.
Yes. Can I read out some of those comments,
absolutely.
Though? They were so great. The results for last week's Duel of the Fates was not a close one at all. It was the Millennium Falcon. Mm-hmm. What? Versus the Slave One.
Yeah.
Now, those that fought for the Slave One fought bravely. They fought with intensity.
Myself included.
Yes. Okay. At the end of the day, 27 votes Ooh. To the Slave One.
Yeah, I knew it was going to be a landslide.
The Millennium Falcon had 76 votes and counting. Mm. Like, it's still going up to this day. But some of the really cool comments that we got for the Falcon. Matthew wrote in saying the Falcon is iconic and sexy and it's all I ever wanted to fly growing up. Slave One has some badass weapons, sure, but I have to go Falcon. She'll make 0.5 past light speed. She may not look like much, but she's got it where it counts. And we've also got one from Tyler who said, sorry, Master Kenobi, but it's the Falcon. You should know you paid to fly in the damn thing.
That's true.
You got served. We've got a couple from Slave One as well. Kenneth Luke Steichen said, I got to go Slave One. Nothing cooler than a fire spray class police cruiser owned by the coolest bounty hunter ever. And George Mendata Diaz says, I love the Millennium Falcon, but the Slave One has seismic charges. So
hey, yeah, my favorite
has to go the Slave One because that sound rules. We do read all of your comments, by the way. I go through them as a giddy little girl.
Absolutely. JT, we got some people on the line? No?
Yep.
No?
That's cool. Don't worry, guys. If you have missed out and you are watching this going, oh, I didn't know, I would have loved to have chatted with you guys, jump on our Facebook page. Just search Jet Air Alliance on the Schmoes No Network, because the best part about that is that we are the admins. So everything that you write, we get to see. So drop us a line as on a post. Comment on all the kind of the competitions that we're running, in a way. A competition? Is it a competition? A
competition,
yeah. The Duel of Fates is a...
It's a debate competition in life. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So we took a few calls today. We're going to do that again. Eventually, you know, hey, you know what, folks? The show, one day we might broadcast this live, which will have more Twitter interaction. Right now, we record live to tape, which is what we got with right now. And I'm excited to hear some of the fans. Pablo from Mexico, that makes me excited. We're reaching international.
Hey, I know there's a lot of Aussies as well watching this.
I would hope so. I would hope so. And also coming up, again, this is kind of a celebration for you guys, the fans, this week, this Labor Day show, because you guys have been so great to us. You've been doing your subscribing and your rating and reviewing of the show on iTunes, kept us in the top 20. And it's not all about rankings and numbers. It's not why we do it, but it is definitely something that will keep the show going. So that's why it's so important.
And also the reviews that you've been writing on iTunes, I read those as well. In fact, hell, I commented one myself saying how biased I was. Yeah, I love reading them too. So as a thank you for doing that, we really appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Loud and clear.
And don't forget to subscribe to the Schmoes No YouTube channel with all the podcast shows on there. That is youtube.com/SchmoesNoPodcast. The Schmoes No Network is off and running, and Profiles and Guilty Pleasures and Meet the Movie Press and the Schmoes No Movie Show, which is still live every Thursday, 6 p.m. PST on SchmoesNo.com. Go do the same over there. Rate and review. Give our friends a little help. And
Let's say we're on 2,000 likes, we get you guys back on the phones as well.
Absolutely. That's what we're going to push for. Make that push
for
2,000 likes. So before we leave, of course, we like to every week pay tribute to a fallen, well, I'll call him a hero from the Star Wars universe, an unknown rebel soldier or an Imperial fighter. Somebody, last week it was Snort, the Gamorrean guard who met his fate.
That's six children.
Six little shoots and feeders died at the hands of the Rancor. This week, well, this was suggested by a good friend of mine, an eventual guest on the show, I hope, and Offbeat Bride managing editor Megan Finley wrote me and said, you know who I feel really sorry for every time I watch Empire Strikes Back? The Imperial probe droid.
It was just doing its job.
It really was. So today we're going to pay tribute to the fallen Viper-class Imperial probe droid that heroically gave its own existence to locate the hidden rebel base for the honor and glory of the Empire. Now, I know what you're thinking out there. You're thinking droids, well, they have no soul.
And they have been programmed.
Right. I have no connection to this Imperial probe droid. But let me ask you a question. I'll ask you this too, Ma. If a similar fate had been dealt to, say, C-3PO, R2-D2, or that gonk droid in the Sandcrawler, would you have been sad?
Not for Gonk, but for R2. Every time you even threaten to, you know, blow him up, it kills me.
That's right. There's a soul in those droids. So I'm guessing you would feel the same way. So why can't we feel the same way for the Imperial probe droid? As Admiral Ozzel himself explained to Captain Piet, we have thousands of probe droids searching the galaxy. I want proof, not leads. So that makes the work and findings of this particular Viper-class probe droid so impressive and so important. This was the droid that uncovered the base of those rebel rousers. After spending a cold night on Hoth and killing a vicious Wampa, this plucky and determined probe droid advanced on the rebel base and actually neutralized a rebel soldier stationed at Echo Station 3-8, located in Zone 12 of the base. He moved east to get some information, but unfortunately that soldier was able to broadcast back to Echo Base, and Rogues 10 and 11 were dispatched to the location with known mercenaries and agitators Han Solo and Chewbacca in tow. The probe droid had seen enough, though, to broadcast key information back to his Imperial masters, including images of the base, the shield generator, and they were key to the Empire's successful attack on the base. However, this probe droid would never know that. He'd never get to know what he did for the Empire, because Solo and Chewie flanked him, and the probe droid initiated his self-destruct sequence, taking his own existence, denying Solo the right to claim a full kill, and helping the Empire take one more step towards crushing this insignificant little rebellion. So we salute you, Viper-class Imperial probe droid, and thank you for your work.
Kamikaze.
He really was.
He gave everything for it.
For the cause.
Well, that has been Jedi Alliance, guys. Thank you so much again for watching this. If you like it, if you're watching it on YouTube, give it a like. If you have been listening to this on iTunes, it means that you've subscribed, and we really appreciate that too. Rate, review, comment, you know what to do.
That's right. Thank you for listening to the Jedi Alliance, because many Bothans died to bring us this information.
Thanks, Ken Mothma.
For producers Christian Harloff, Mark Ellis, and the entire Schmoes No Network crew, we would like to thank you for listening to the Jedi Alliance on the Schmoes No Network. Special thanks to Kevin Undergaro and Maria Menounos, the author of Every Girl's Guide to Diet and Fitness, in stores now. To watch or listen to other Schmoes No Network episodes, get movie news, and join the conversation, be sure to visit SchmoesNo.com and find the Jedi Alliance on iTunes and subscribe, rate, and review. I'm the Pit Boss, and this has been a presentation of Schmoes No Network.